Devin, Representative Hortman moves that House File 1377 be recommended pass be referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Representative Hortman, my understanding is you have a DE1 amendment, and that is an author's amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Hortman moves the DE1 amendment, an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Hortman, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill relates to mortgage foreclosures, and it is a Peace in the Valley bill. Ron Elwood from Legal Aid will explain the particulars very succinctly. The main idea is there is a national settlement in place. There is a great deal of activity that's happened at the federal level that the banks and credit unions have to comply with. And what we're saying here in Minnesota is you can't go forward with the foreclosure unless you've met the terms of the federal settlement or you've complied with the existing federal law that already applies to banks and credit unions. It's a very simple, straightforward approach. It doesn't put new requirements on our financial institutions. It just says comply with the law before you proceed to a foreclosure.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. I see you've got a couple folks with you. By the way, are you aware of any opposition at this point, or is there anyone here that testify in opposition to the bill?
No, and they can just be here to answer questions if you feel fully informed.
Okay. And we do have a rather long agenda, so that's why I'm trying to move along. But Representative Hoppe, do you
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not aware of any opposition. I see the bankers here. Maybe we want to hear from them briefly as well. I'm not aware that anyone's opposed, but as long as we're asking.
Sure. Well, why don't, if they have opposition or share, want to have any concerns to share, we'll hear from them. Otherwise, I see them shaking their head no for the record. Other questions or concerns from members? If not, Representative Hortman renews the motion that House File 1377 as amended be recommended pass and refer to the Committee on Civil Law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Thank you, Representative Hortman, and thank you to folks who were here to answer questions. Next up is Representative Schoen's bill, House File 1284. And Representative Schoen will move that House File 1284 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Representative Schoen, it's my understanding there's an A1 amendment. That's an author's amendment. Representative Schoen will move the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Schoen, to your bill, House File 1284.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my testifiers are coming up. But basically, this is a bill related to the sale of motor vehicle fuel payment. And what we're just removing about a two or three line sentence bill that says prohibits local governments from criminalizing the or restricting the sale of motor fuel by prepay only. And so I'll just let these folks get to it and explain why, and then I'll certainly offer some commentary at the end.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. Great explanation. Sir, if you'll just state your name and for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the members of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. We're here today to testify in support of the bill that you have before you today. We thank the author, Mr. Representative Schoen, for bringing it forward. Today I have with me Steve Rush, who is a member of the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association, who would like to share some information with you.
Mr. Rush, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Steve Rush. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Holiday Companies, the Bloomington-based privately held convenience store company with locations throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify here today, and thank you, Representative Schoen, for sponsoring this very important bill for us. We're asking your support for this legislation so we can engage in a transaction with our customers without interruption or regulation by local municipalities. And there's three main reasons that we ask you to support this bill here today. First of all, requiring a customer to prepay for their gasoline or pay at the pump is extremely cumbersome for our customers. Oftentimes our customers want to come in the store and buy things, and of course we encourage that. And so if they pay at the pump and they drive off, we lose that inside business. But it's also very inconvenient for a customer who wants to come inside our store to come in and put down their credit card in the midst of a busy, hectic convenience store in the morning, or throw down, I don't know, $20, $30 to say, here's what I think I can buy, but I'll come back in and pay for more or buy other things after I'm done filling up at the pump. And as we all know, especially during the winter months, it's even more uncomfortable, shall we say, to have to, you know, go inside more than once. And if you're elderly or disabled, then requiring that person to come inside the store more than one time is simply not appropriate and not convenient for the customer. The second reason we ask you to support this is that, as we all know, the city of Coon Rapids has passed this, and we've had a great deal of difficulty, frankly, in our in-store operations, and our employees end up being the brunt of the public's displeasure with all this, because this is extremely unpopular with the individuals who would normally shop in Coon Rapids. We actually have 6 stores there. 4 of them are franchise stores, and 2 of them are corporate Holiday units. And I'm just getting a lot of feedback that this is extremely unpopular with the customers, and they're taking out on my employees, unfortunately. And the third main reason is that we asked for your help here today is that this is mandating a certain form of payment, pay at the pump or prepay, is just hurting our business. I remember hearing testimony from another one of Kevin's members. His name is Rick Dean. And that gentleman, who owns, I believe, 2 units, one is a Marathon, he suffered serious business losses both at the pump as well as in-store sales. And I have to tell you, for my company as well, my franchisees, we're seeing significant decline in sales both at the pump and inside, and we simply can't afford to lose those types of sales in this type of economy. And we know this traffic is being driven elsewhere, because I've got units in Blaine and I have units in Anoka that inexplicably are doing a lot more volume than they should. And of course, the reason that they're getting that is that people are bypassing Coon Rapids. So I know you got a hectic schedule today. Thank you for your time, and we please ask for your support. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, sir. You've just summed up why you're before the Commerce Committee today. So, Representative Schoen, you've got a couple wrap ups, and then we do have a testifier from the League of Minnesota Cities as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a pretty good bipartisan bill, and I certainly don't want to prohibit the small businesses in my district from earning a dollar in case someone should decide that they're upset about having to respond to gas drive-offs, of which I, on a daily basis when I'm at work as a police officer, nothing drives me nuts more than when a gas station decides to sell, and then we try to have to follow up with that. But that is their business. That is how they make money. They have to deal with that. And I would rather say don't criminalize the act or tell them that they can't sell it the way they want to sell it, and let the local agencies decide how they want to respond. And I think the Petroleum Marketers Association and these groups have done a great job in finding those solutions on how to recover the costs and the losses related to gas drive-offs without needing police intervention. And so that's an even better deal. So let's move this forward and take care of our local businesses as well as our communities.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. We have one testifier from League of Minnesota Cities, Mr. Hines. Welcome back. And gentlemen, thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities. I apologize for getting in late and missing the testimony. The League of Minnesota Cities does oppose this legislation because it completely restricts a local unit of government's ability to regulate what it normally can regulate, trade and commerce, within its own jurisdiction. And again, I apologize for missing the testimony. If I am retreading ground, I am sorry. But the local ordinance at issue in Coon Rapids was passed in response to a serious concern that the city council had. In 2010, there were 492 gas drive-offs in Coon Rapids. In 2011, there were 481 drive-offs. It's a crime. It affects the crime rate of the city, which reflects poorly on the city. The police department has to investigate these. They have to file reports. It's a burden on the city. And so the city council decided after public hearings to impose the ordinance, which requires that people prepay gas for gas. And after the ordinance went into effect, the number of drive-offs dropped to 0. So if you look at it from strictly preventing that crime, it was effective. Now, there's no doubt that it has an impact on the business. And you know, I'm sensitive to that. It has imposed a cost. All regulations and laws do. I think the question is whether local elected officials at the city council are in the best position to look at the facts and make a decision about the ordinance, or whether the legislature should broadly prohibit any city from adopting an ordinance regulating trade and commerce within its jurisdiction. And the league does oppose that type of legislation that will completely restrict the ability of a community to deal with a similar situation.
Mr. Hines, would you agree with me, though, that the efforts that have been made by the city to prevent the crime have actually hurt the victim worse than the crime itself?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Hines,
again, this has had a serious impact on the business, and I will note that after the ordinance was passed, the city council, I think within 3 months, had an open forum and requested information from the business owner to detail the impact of the ordinance. I believe the city council is scheduled to meet tomorrow or sometime this week to discuss the impact of the issue. And I think it was an issue in the local election. It seems that a number of city council people may have taken public positions and been elected into office on the basis of the ordinance, all of which I would submit supports local control. If the local elected officials pass an ordinance and people don't like it, they can be tossed out. And they've responded with public meetings, and they're reevaluating the law. So I think just completely prohibiting any future ordinance is the wrong way to go.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Are there other questions or comments from members of the Commerce Committee? If not, Representative Schoen renews his motion as amended that House File 1284, again, as amended, is passed and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schoen. Is Representative Myra still here? Representative Myra, sorry to keep you waiting. Representative Hoppe will move that House File 817 be recommended pass and refer to the General Register. My understanding, Representative Myra, is that you've got an A1 author's amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
All right, then Representative Hoppe will move the A1 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Myra, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate your hearing my bill today. House File 817, as amended, seeks to exempt certified public accountants from private detective licensure requirements, since their work is already regulated by the Board of Accountancy. The private detective statute, that's Minnesota Statute 326.338, offers exemptions to a number of professions, including attorneys, but not CPAs. Mr. Chair, I have a testifier, Mr. Fragnito.
Mr. Fragnito, welcome back to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief in my comments. Representative Myra has summed up the bill. The CPAs are frequently engaged in performing forensic accounting analysis of financial data to determine whether fraud or other wrongdoing has occurred, to identify and assist in the recovery of those funds, and also to are appointed as a third-party neutral by the courts. And what we're looking to do is exempt that type of work from the private detective statutes, so that it's clear that if the work is regulated by the Board of Accountancy, CPAs do not also need to be licensed as private detectives.
So they can just be private eyes without having that's... All right. Are there any other questions for Mr. Fragnito or for the author? Is there anyone here that desires to testify relative to the bill? Seeing none. Representative Hoppe will renew his motion that House File 817 as amended would be recommended to pass. And actually, I understand public safety would like to see it. Is that the author's understanding as well? Well, it's our understanding,
okay.
So that's where you're going.
I thought it was going to the General Register, but whatever.
Yeah, we'd like to move you to the consent calendar if there was one, but it's my understanding public safety has asked to take a look at it. So,
thank you.
Representative Hoppe renews his motion that House File 817 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Public Safety Committee. All in favor say aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Next up, I understand Representative Lane is here. If she is, all right, the chair will move that House File 662 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. Representative Lane, welcome back.
Hope it's crisp this time. House File 662 is the Department of Health's technical bill. So I think the part that relates to this committee is right on, and I will pass it over to Matthew Colley from the Department of Health.
Mr. Cowley, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. The section that we're looking at is Section 2 of the bill, the Radon Awareness Act. This is a provision that would, at the time of a home sale, have a disclosure made by the owner of the home on whether or not they have tested for radon and whether they know what those levels are, as well as the handing out of a brochure about the dangers of radon and the department's recommendation that all homes within the state be tested for radon.
We have some radon in the room here, Mr. Cowley, and it affects the microphone. So.
Mr. Chair and members, we've worked with the realtors on getting language that is comfortable to all parties involved, and we feel this is a good provision moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Cowley. Is there anyone else here that desires to testify with respect to the bill? Any questions or concerns from members? If not, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 662 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lane, and thank you, Mr. Colley. Next up is Representative Purcell's bill. The Chair will move House File 458 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. My understanding is there is an A2 amendment. And that is an author's amendment. Representative Purcell, is that your understanding as well? It's an author's amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment. I trust you that you have that.
We'll move the Chair will move the A2 amendment. That's an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Representative Purcell, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would quite succinctly say that House File 458, as amended, is intended to keep formaldehyde and formaldehyde-containing ingredients out of children's personal care products. And as you could read in the amendment, we've worked. Worked with folks on all sides of the issue here, and believe we've arrived at a consensus that everybody can be maybe not happy with, but accept. And so I'd answer questions as they come up, and I have a couple of testifiers here today too.
Okay, thank you, Representative Purcell, and thank you for working with both sides to try to find that consensus. In light of that, we're happy to still hear the testimony, but I would just suggest to the testifiers, just don't mess it up. We've achieved that peace in the valley that Representative Davids always looks for. The key is to proceed with your testimony and just keep in mind that some sort of arrangement has been worked out. So welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kathleen Schuler. I'm with the Healthy Legacy Coalition, and we're working with Representative Purcell on the bill. I don't really have testimony, but I'm here to answer questions if you have any. And we had a mother who was supposed to testify, but she had child care issues, so she isn't here either.
Yeah, that's been known to happen to parents,
yes,
is having those child care issues. So we certainly understand. We're happy to have you here for questions. Is there anyone else, by the way, that's here to testify with respect to the bill? Mr. Quillis, welcome back to the committee. If you just identify yourself for the record, as always, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tony Quillis, Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. You are correct. As always, we like to achieve, as Representative Davis has told us over the years, peace in the valley. We have worked very closely with Representative Purcell. We thank him for his amendment, the A2 amendment. And as you said, we're not going to always be perfect, but we're working towards that way, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Questions or concerns for Mr. Quillis or for the author or any other testifier? Is there anyone else that desires to be heard with respect to the bill? Seeing none, the Chair will renew his motion that House File 458 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion carries. Thank you, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Next up, we have Representative Huntley. Thank you for your patience, Representative Huntley. House File 978 will be removed by the Chair to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. Representative Huntley, it's my understanding that there is a DE1 amendment, and that is an author's amendment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair, and it gets the bill, I think, in the same form that it's in the Senate as well.
Even better, Representative Huntley. The chair will move the DE1 amendment. All in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. Representative Huntley, to your bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, and members, what this bill does is adapt Minnesota health insurance law to the Affordable Care law that was passed in Washington. Right now, we have many things in our law that don't match up with what the federal law currently is. And the federal government's law trumps us because of the Commerce Clause. So if we don't change our laws to match what the feds say, our laws won't be what is actually being done in the real world. But in addition to that, if we adapt the federal requirements, that means that we can enforce the federal law as a state and not have to let the federal government come in and try to enforce their laws. This bill spends no money, so it does not go to a finance committee, and it adapts our laws to things like no pre-existing conditions, no lifetime maxes or caps, no yearly spending caps, no co-pays for primary care, and it also puts in place the modified community rating. For those that don't know, community rating means community rating means that everybody would say pay the same no matter what their age is or what their health status is. The federal law says that it can vary, the rates can vary from, I think, 1 to 3 based on age. So elderly people up to 65 would pay 3 times as much as the 25-year-old people that are. And it also allows for a increase in premium payments to those that smoke tobacco of 1.5. If we don't pass this bill, the feds will just come in and enforce their laws anyway. And I have two people here to explain the bill to you in more detail.
Okay, Representative Huntley, are you aware of any folks that are... We don't have anybody signed up to testify in opposition. My understanding, it's just literally conformity. You're not doing anything extra other than just conformity. Is that right?
It's just conformity. In fact, I talked to one of the representatives of the health insurance industry, and they're in support of this bill. They're very thankful that these two folks have worked very closely with them to get rid of some technical things that they didn't like, so I don't think there's any opposition.
No, my understanding from the health care is that they want to get this done sooner rather than later so that they can get on with their lives and keep moving forward with dealing with it. But are there, unless there's questions, I don't necessarily think we're going to look for a great deal of testimony, if there's anyone here to testify in opposition or anyone here to testify relative to the bill, then we'll just chair over news motion that House file. I'm sorry.
No, not you.
Oh, sit down, for heaven's sakes. The chair will renew his motion that House File 978 is amended to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Huntley, and thank you to your testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. The shortest hearing I've ever had on anything.
You want me to reconsider and put you back in that chair for a while? All right, we've got next up is Representative Johnson's file, House File 1255. Representative Johnson will move that House File 1255 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Johnson, to your bill. And I understand you have a special guest star with you today. Welcome back, Madam Speaker. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The purpose of the bill is to recognize broadband as critical infrastructure in our state's economy, whether we're talking about the medical field or educational opportunities or just connecting with our government in the way that we want to connect. Broadband is critical, and it's become a necessity. The bill does several things. Let me just mention briefly what they are. It directs the Department of Transportation to post on its website an annually update Upcoming construction projects, so a provider can notify the Department of Transportation of their interest in installing broadband infrastructure. And it also establishes an Office of Broadband Development in the Department of Commerce and lays out specific duties. Much of the duties entail coordinating, consulting with state, regional, and local and private entities to further the state's statutory broadband goals of universal access and high upload and download speeds. It also directs the office to coordinate Dig Once efforts with the DOT and Department of Commerce for planning and installing a broadband conduit. And lastly, to provide and produce an annual report regarding the status of broadband infrastructure in the state, as well as recommend strategies to further expand it. And as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, we have a special guest, and I'll turn it over to the speaker.
Okay. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, Margaret Anderson Kelleher, Chair of the Governor's Broadband Task Force, as well as President and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association. I get the idea that you're moving quickly through this, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank you and Representative Johnson for your attention to this issue. This bill represents about 13 months of work by volunteers on the Governor's Broadband Task Force that represent areas all across the state, business, nonprofits, as well as government representatives working together to find the way to make sure that we make good on the statutory goals that were passed in 2010, which is broadband access for all Minnesotans at a high enough speed that they can do the things they need to do, be able to have a doctor's visit online in their home if that's what their need is, be able to learn online if that's what their need is, be able to run their small business no matter where it is in the state of Minnesota. And so our plan, one piece of that plan, is to enhance the Office of Broadband Development, and that is what this bill does. And we are thankful to Representative Johnson for carrying the bill, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bill.
Thank you. I don't know what to call you anymore, Margaret. Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker, Chair Kelleher, all that good stuff. Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to the testifiers. Just kind of looking at from an FTE standpoint, will there be, what are we looking at here?
Mr. Speaker, Representative Sudzinski. We're looking at probably a director and another staff. The funding that's reflected in the governor's recommendation found in the Department of Commerce budget is $2,000 per year through 2017.
Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of, it looks like on page 3, or subdivision 5, the reporting portion of the bill, just seems like that may be a larger portion, kind of a fact-finding part of the position as far as writing the report, looking at progress throughout the year when it comes to broadband across the state. Who currently does that now?
So, Ms. Anderson Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we actually, as the task force, have been doing this work with support from the Department of Commerce. And so currently we are all volunteers, and I will say that this activity had no budget to it when the governor appointed the task force. And so out of the Department of Commerce, Diane Wells has been helping staff and has been the main staff person. Bill Hoffman from Connect Minnesota, and then our staff person from the Minnesota High Tech Association as well. But as you can imagine, to keep that going to the point where we get all Minnesotans border-to-border broadband is a high bar to expect of people to continue to just do this without additional support. And one of the main points of this, and I think you'll appreciate this, is in the work that we were doing as volunteers, there were several times where we needed specific information, things like modeling out of the policy recommendations that we made, that we could not find anyone to figure out who to do that. And so one of the ideas behind this is a coordination effort around that to bring the resources that are already out there to bear on this problem. And, you know, we look at this, the task force itself, and I think that at some point there will be some sort of language that will tie the volunteer task force, because we are appointed under executive order into this. We're willing to continue to help guide this work and give input from the business perspective as well as the nonprofit and governmental perspective to it. But it does need something else, and it needs that higher level coordination. There's federal funding opportunities that I'm almost certain that Minnesota could take more advantage of, that the director could be out there doing the coordination across state agencies. And we don't really have the capacity to do that. And even Ms. Wells in the Department of Commerce can't quite do that to bring that to bear on the issue.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from a kind of a decision-making process, will the director be able to kind of dictate essentially where projects will potentially go, or will they be more of kind of a shepherd process? And then, you know, if it would be to the first part deciding, do you see more of a formal board or something like that at some point forming in the future?
Ms. Anderson-Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is a great question and something that we have not contemplated. I don't think that people contemplate this office as a directing of the projects in terms of underserved and unserved Minnesotans. It's really a coordination effort, because we see this as needing a real partnership between the public and private to get these done. And so we don't see this as taking away from the private sector in terms of actually getting the broadband out to Minnesotans, but in ways to enhance it and you know, make it happen, because in these truly unserved areas, the cost of getting broadband to Minnesotans is not going to be a thing that the investors in are looking at saying, hey, we're going to go out and do that, because it's often 3 to 4 times higher.
The gentleman from Lyon is complete. All right. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the testimony. Just a quick question. In the task force study, what percentage of Minnesota residents would you say are currently don't have access to broadband? And so how big of a problem are we looking at?
Ms. Anderson-Killer.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, the issue is how fast. And so to the 2010 legislative goals that are in state statute, the most recent number is that about 66% of Minnesotans have speeds, access to speeds at the 10 up and 10 down and 5 up megabits. What happens next is if we go to a much slower upload speed, okay, then 86% of Minnesotans have access. There are areas in the state that truly are totally unserved at this point, but I don't have it off the top of my head, and I'll get that to you. So we're making progress, but the progress to get there by 2015, when the goals in state statute are, we're too slow. We're moving too slowly. We're moving at about 5% or 6% every 18 months right now. And so it's 2013. 2015 is the goal. In a politely worded but I think realistic letter to the governor in the December report, said without further intervention, we are not going to make the 2015 goal. And so that's why we're here today. This is one piece of that coordination intervention.
Okay. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson and Ms. Kelleher. Thank you. Nice to see you again. Is there anything that you could do to get us, I know we're talking about the state, but let's just think local for a second. Is there any way we can get cell phone service in this room?
Yeah, we may have to lay this bill over until we get cell phone service in this room.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Anderson-Keller.
You know, I always knew that this basement hearing room was a particularly productive hearing room, and I think I know why. No one can look at their cell phones during the hearing. You want to get out of here, don't you?
It's actually kind of nice. It's a little escape for a little while. Are there other questions or concerns for the author or the witness? Would you do us a favor? I think whether it was Chair Hoppe chairing this committee or this chair and Chair Johnson, please carry our thanks back to the members of the task force. I know some of those members are in this room, but the volunteer efforts, it's one thing to volunteer, but the number of hours and the expertise that's gone into this is exemplary and extraordinary, and we very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will do that from you and from the committee. They will appreciate that. They are a hard-working crew.
Yeah.
All right.
Unless there's anything further, Representative Johnson will renew his motion that House File 1255 be reckoned and passed and refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion prevails. House 1255 is passed. Next up, Representative Halverson is 1587. Representative Halverson will move that House File 1587 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Halverson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here today with a great piece of bipartisan legislation that does a couple of very simple but important things to help consumers have a few more choices in how they interact with their insurance companies. Number one, it allows the insurance companies, if the customer so chooses, to communicate with the customer in a language other than English. And it also allows insurance companies, if the consumer so chooses, to communicate electronically rather than with paper. So it's fairly simple and straightforward, and Mr. Johnson is here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Anything you want to add, Mr. Johnson? Welcome back, by the way.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'd be happy to answer questions on the bill and keep it at that.
That sounds terrific to me. Is there anyone else, before we do that, anyone else here to testify with respect to House File 458? Or 1587, for that matter, as long as we're at it, 1587. Anyone else? Any questions or concerns from members of the committee? If not, the Representative Halverson will renew her motion that House File 1587 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that motion carries. Thank you, Representative Halverson. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And I think the remaining two are mine, so I'll wander over to the other side.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Atkins. Would you like to move, do House File 1060 first?
Sure. Actually, you know what, Madam Chair, why don't we do 459? I think there might be few more people who want to hear about that. So if it's all right, I'd move House File 459 be recommended passed and referred to the General Register. And there are a couple of amendments, Madam Chair.
Yes, I see you have an A3 amendment. I don't see it here. Do you have it?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I'm just pulling that. There's a number of sheets in members' packets, and so we'll get down to the...
A lot of them. Where is it? In the back?
There we go.
It's in your packets.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A3 amendment, but I do desire to incorporate a slight oral amendment on line 1.9 and 1.18. Before the word intended, insert the word primarily. And I'll say that once more. That would be on line 1.9 and 1.18. Before the word intended, insert the word primarily. And with that incorporated oral amendment, I will offer the A3 author's amendment.
Okay, members, do you all have that A3 and the oral amendment? And all those in favor of the A3 amendment do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And the amendment is adopted. The A4 amendment, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've been working pretty hard, Madam Chair. This one is also an author's amendment designed to bring some peace in the valley to Representative Davids and others' worlds, so I will move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Any questions, members, on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. A4 is adopted. Two-year bill as amended, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would gather that most members have probably read the bill, so I won't go too deeply into it, but bisphenol A is a product in Minnesota that has been demonstrated, and not just here in Minnesota, but across the country and around the world, to have certain harmful effects, particularly on young children. Originally, and I'll speak mostly to the amendments because they're the new part of the bill, we originally were talking about products that were marketed towards children up to the age of 12, and you'll see from the A3 amendment that we have significantly constrained that, aiming at children under the age of 3, and then certain products, in particular ones that are used by children. The A4 amendment then, Madam Chair, was with the help of our staff. We wanted to make sure that we got the language right. So that's what the A4 amendment does. And we think as a result of doing this, that children in Minnesota will be safer and the products will be better. And with that, I would be happy to turn it over to those who might desire to testify or if members have questions.
Any questions, members? None? Let's have your testifiers come down. Robert Chadwick. And Dr. Peterson, you both. Well, I guess they're not here. Nope, here we have Mr. Quillis from the chamber.
I'm hoping he's going to say nice things about my bill now, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Tony Quillis from the Director of Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Director of Environmental Policy again. Sitting next to the Chair of the Commerce Committee, you think I'd say bad things?
Well, you could try.
Madam Chair, same as Representative Purcell's bill, I want to thank Representative Atkins for his hard work in addressing a number of our concerns, and it provides some consistency in the marketplace with the A3 and the A4, and we thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. And any other questions? Members? Anyone else in the audience wish to testify? Seeing none, Representative Atkins, to your bill.
Madam Chair, I'd renew my motion that House File 459 is amended, be recommended to pass, and refer to the General Register.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Representative Atkins, it's on its way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I'll then move that House File 1060 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register, and there is an author's amendment as well.
Okay, so we have House File 1060 and an author's amendment, the A13-0272. To the amendment, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll offer the A13-0272 amendment.
Any questions on the amendment, members? If not, all those in favor of the amendment do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. And the amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is, members, and I'll explain the amendment in a moment here, but this is the annual charitable gaming bill, or lawful gaming bill, as it's more technically called. It does a number of mostly technical kinds of changes, but some updates, some things that just sort of bring certain things up to date. The the amendment did address paddle wheel provisions, and that was something that between the industry and those impacted by it, they had come to an agreement on. I know that there was some concern from some folks that would like to do paddle wheels in Minnesota. But my sense of the industry and what they're telling me at this point is that they're just not quite prepared to go that direction, and they're a little concerned about opposition that may come from different corners. And so we're going to keep talking about that piece of it, but that is what the amendment did, and I just wanted to make sure that you were clear in terms of what was in and what was not in the bill. Just walking briefly through the bill, you'll see in the annual audit figure, that's the first page. Increases the amount from $500,000 to $750,000. That, I believe, was actually Representative Detmer's idea in a standalone bill, and we've incorporated that piece, and I expect to give him credit as we move forward with the bill for that. Some updates on page 2 of what we're talking about with paddle tickets and paddle ticket cards. By the way, as I'm doing this, I'd ask Mr. Lund from ACM to join me, or Mr. Barrett as well, for questions that may arise. All of that page is relative to the paddle wheel. On at the very bottom of page 2, this is an important piece about the evidence bond and the principal amount of not less than $100,000. We've added that not less than portion. There's not much on page 3 to call your attention to. Page 4 is mostly about record keeping and certain business days gives the time for deposit a little bit more latitude or flexibility. We were finding that in the real world that was very hard to comply with in terms of the deposits of the receipts from the bank on the electronic pull tab games. I'm sure that I've missed a piece or two, so that's why I sought Mr. Lund to come down here and walk us through if there's additional pieces that I may have missed.
Mr. Lund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Section 6 is raising the number of off-site events from the current 4 to a proposed 12. Those are the county fairs, church festivals, and the city days that require off-site permits. And Section 8 raises the current paper pull tab receipt requirement from $50 to $100.
So I didn't miss too much, Madam Chair.
No. Good job. Any questions, members? Seeing none. Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, then I will renew my motion that House File 1060, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register.
And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is on its way.
Overwhelming support, Madam Chair. I appreciate it.
I'm with them. That's it. We are.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you know what? We did have one critical announcement to make this afternoon. The annual House Commerce Committee March Madness NCAA basketball brackets are now available. You can do it online. If you are completely online inept, you can turn in a paper version to the committee administrator. For purposes of those looking to keep me out of jail, it's completely free. I buy pizza for anybody who can beat me. In years past, the ineptitude of this committee has been remarkable. Last year, I think I only bought pizza for like 7 people. So I'm guessing that we can do better than that, and would invite people to join our fun and games. With that, Madam Chair,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are adjourned. Yes.